Now, just before we move on to the whole issue of homelessness, continuing with our information webinar on the EU and the queries raised by listeners this morning, we've dealt with the countries that are members, we've dealt with the countries who are not members, we've dealt with the countries like Russia that are transcontinental, we've dealt with countries like Turkey and their constitutional obligation on the military to overthrow the government, we're told, if the government is not behaving itself. I find that kind of mesmerising altogether. And Owen, two final queries on the EU and then we're going to leave it. Are we the only country still driving on the left side? And the countries that don't use the euro?
Yeah, so we're not the only country that drives on the left-hand side in the EU, because Malta and Cyprus also drive on the left-hand side, and obviously the UK do as well. So there's only four countries in Europe that drive on the left, and three now in the EU. So there we are, ourselves, Malta and Cyprus. And then the members of the EU that don't use the euro, we're told that there's eight that don't use the euro, and they are Bulgaria, Croatia, Czech Republic, Denmark, Hungary, Poland, Romania and Sweden. And the rest of us in the EU all use the euro. So there we are.
All right. Thanks very much indeed, Owen, for the details on that. And we'll park the whole EU now and the different bits of information that we have brought you this morning in relation to that as we move on to our other topic this morning, which is under the headline, I saw a call for every death of a homeless person to have an adult safeguarding review. The Joint Committee on Housing is also calling for an increase in rent supports for homeless people outside Dublin trying to rent a home, wrote Kitty Holland, social affairs correspondent of the Irish Times. A member of that committee is indeed Sinn Féin TD and party spokesperson on housing, Owen O'Brien. Kid Fulton, Shakarish, Owen.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you for joining us on the programme. Kitty Holland's article began with, every death of a homeless person should be subjected to what's called an adult safeguarding review to ensure any missed opportunity to support them is recorded. Your committee apparently will recommend. How might that work and what would it be comprised of?
Well, first of all, just to say, the Rockets Housing Committee unanimously agreed a report on homelessness with 17 recommendations to government for policy changes. And we made this report after a series of hearings where we brought in people, whether they're frontline workers in homeless services, in the local government sector, the voluntary sector, and also some of the country's leading academic experts on homelessness. One of the reasons why we did this is because 2020 saw an increase in the newspaper reporting of deaths of people who are experiencing homelessness, not just in Dublin, but also in Cork, Galway, and other locations. And we felt it was really important to kind of just examine this issue and see, first of all, was it the case that there was an increase in deaths? And what do we think government should do to try and prevent such deaths happening in the future? One of the key recommendations is this idea of an adult safeguarding review, or what's often called a critical incident report. Essentially what that is if somebody dies while accessing or who is known to health services, in this case homeless services, there's an attempt to look back and see, could anything have been done in terms of service provision that could have reduced the chances of that premature death? The purpose is not to apportion blame, that's dealt with in a separate process, but it's to try and improve service provision into the future to reduce the likelihood of death. This is something that's done in our hospitals, so where, for example, a patient dies unexpectedly in a hospital, there would be a critical incident review. So we think this is a really important mechanism, because a separate report that had actually been launched in parallel with ours was commissioned by the Dublin Regional Homeless Executive, Dr. Austin O'Carroll.
Now, could I put a question to you on that very report? Because yes. I'm quite shocked at what I see in Dr. O'Carroll's report. There are two reports, as we say, your own from the Oireachtas Committee on Housing and this one from Dr. O'Carroll. It found deaths in Dublin's single homeless population increased by over 60% last year compared with 2019 and almost doubled since 2018. He reports those homeless more than 18 months have a mortality rate 8 times that of people who have been homeless less than 6 months. There's quite staggering figures, a doubling since 2018 of deaths in Dublin.
Absolutely, and although Austin's report was launched about a month ago, we invited him to relaunch his report in parallel with ours yesterday, because again, a lot of his recommendations are similar to ours. One thing just to stress, the homeless population that Dr. O'Carroll's report was looking at was a, I suppose the best way to describe it is a subset of the overall homeless population. The vast majority of people who are homeless simply because they don't have a roof over their heads. Either they can't afford a home or they received a notice to quit because of a landlord selling. But we do have a smaller group of people who experience entrenched long-term homelessness. They're in general single people, and there's often an overlap between their experience of homelessness and their experience of addiction and or mental ill health. And that group of people have a much, much higher mortality rate, particularly at a young age. And it's a factor of, I suppose, the intersection of addiction, mental ill health, and homelessness. Two of the key things that Dr. O'Carroll recommended, the first is there's a specific housing program for these cohort of people, which is called Housing First. It's getting people out of emergency accommodation, so for surfing and rough sleeping, putting them in accommodation of their own and having wraparound floating supports for as long as is necessary until they're back up on their feet and able to live independently. There's about 200 of those Housing First tenancies delivered annually. The programme for government has a commitment to double that, and we need to see that as a matter of urgency, and Dr. O'Carroll recommends that. And the second thing is he calls for these critical incident reports to ensure that there is ongoing learning between the health services, the homeless services, and the addiction services. There is also a need to increase investment in these vital supports. In many cases, they are underfunded, and it's not just an issue in Dublin. For example, we heard from Novas, a voluntary homeless service provider who specialise in the north, in the southwest, particularly in the Limerick and Clare area, as well as folks from Cork and elsewhere. So there's a lot of good recommendations in both reports.
Indeed, and we heard from Focus recently, and I mean, when we talk about homelessness, there are two elements to that. There are thousands of people who are homeless, but couch surfing and living with in-laws or families or friends or whatever else. We're speaking about people here who are really on the margins and who are possibly sleeping on streets or in hostels and so forth. And your committee heard yesterday, Ona Brin, also about additional rent support through the housing assistance payment. How that might be done in paying an increased amount every second week, was it?
So this is really important. So if you're in Dublin today, and if you're in emergency accommodation, or if you're at risk of becoming homeless, and you're accessing the housing assistance payment through the local authority, there's a discretionary uplift of 50% to try and prevent you from becoming homeless. And that means while, let's say, the half payment for a family could be 11 or 1200, the homeless half level could be about 1800. Outside of Dublin, the discretionary uplift is only 20%. And that's clearly unfair. If somebody is at risk of homelessness or in emergency accommodation seeking to get out, outside of Dublin, they should have exactly the same level of supports. So one of the strong recommendations of the committee, of course, is that that 50% discretionary uplift in Dublin should be available across the state. And this is a targeted measure to try and prevent people from becoming homeless or assist people getting out of emergency accommodation. We also wanted to see independent statutory inspections of all emergency accommodation, both public and private, as well as the phasing out of the use of private emergency accommodation. There's some of the other strong recommendations that are there. But crucially, all of this comes down to housing. Unless there is a significant increased investment, both in social homes and the delivery of Housing First accommodation, then the very high level of homelessness that we still have, notwithstanding the reductions as a result of the blanket ban on evictions that existed last year, we still have 8,000 to 10,000 people in emergency accommodation of one kind or another. We still have 4,000 or so children in emergency accommodation. Some of those children will have spent their fourth year experiencing homelessness. So far, far more needs to be done, both on the prevention side, but crucially, the solution to homelessness is giving people the homes that they need. And that's going to require increased investment, and all eyes will be on the budget in October to see if government delivers on that.
One question on that. We were chatting about this on the phone yesterday with your party colleague, Patricia Ryan, in regards to a spat that's going on here in the South Kildare constituency between herself and independent TD Cathal Berry. And she had said, for example, that he had voted for that recent bill regarding cuckoo funds, whereas his view was that what he voted for were the many measures in that bill which were not to do with cuckoo funds, the extension of government supports and everything else in relation to that. What is your view on that whole bill?
Well, I think there are lots of positive measures in the bill that are to do with business supports and COVID. I think what was really disappointing was at the last minute, government tried to sneak in an amendment that had nothing to do with that legislation. But that was about giving a tax break to institutional investors. And the consequence of that tax break is not only that it will incentivize these institutional investors to buy up houses and duplexes across the country, and particularly in your county, because it's a commuter belt county that's experiencing a lot of interest from institutional investors, but it'll also push up the price of homes, and it'll make local authorities acquiring those homes, whether for social or affordable housing, much more difficult. So I think given the strength of feeling about why these types of tax breaks for cuckoo funds exist, and given the fact that only a few weeks ago Micheál Martin said that he wouldn't do this, and then the government did this huge U-turn, I think anybody who's serious about delivering both more social but crucially affordable homes for working people to buy should have opposed this bill on a point of principle.
And was that the reason, Owen, that Sinn Féin refused pairing arrangements?
Absolutely. And again, pairing arrangements, I suppose, are a sensible arrangement to allow people to conduct dull business. But government only introduced this last-minute amendment on the Friday. They didn't give us adequate time to debate. They used the guillotine to prevent us having time to actually get to many of these amendments. That's not an acceptable way to do legislation. Even, by the way, if you support the legislation, legislation should be properly scrutinised and properly considered. So if the government is going to play fast and loose with parliamentary procedure, both in terms of the tabling of amendments and refusing to give adequate time to consider legislation, then Sinn Féin isn't going to continue with pairing arrangements.
Okay.
We see this all of the time. The last 2 weeks of it all sorts of legislation is rammed through without adequate scrutiny. Rush legislation is bad legislation and leaves all sorts of unintended consequences, and unfortunately this government, like the last, is making a habit of doing just that.
I asked Patricia Ryan that question yesterday, why the pairing arrangements, because Cathal Berry had made that point that Sinn Féin had refused pairing arrangements in regards to that bill. Patricia wasn't aware of that particular reason. She said she would find out, but now thank you for that explanation. That explains that situation. And one final word before you go. The recent Dublin Bay South by-election, for yourself, personally and politically, a good performance by Lynn Boylan in a constituency
Absolutely.
That might not have the socio-economic cohort, if I could put it that way, that might be Sinn Féin's normal appeal.
No, absolutely. The party put in a great campaign, and Lynn did us absolutely proud. I have to say, if I had had a vote in that election, I would have been transferring to progressive non-government candidates. So, well, obviously I wanted Lynn to win. The fact that the government didn't hold the seat, I think, is very significant. And I think it sends a clear signal, both the very substantial Sinn Féin vote and also the very, very significant vote for Ivana Bacsik, a long-standing campaigner on a range of progressive issues, shows people are not happy with this government, whether it's on housing, on childcare, on aspects of how they're managing COVID. And really, this is a government on borrowed time. And you can see both the infighting now within Fine Gael, but particularly within Fianna Fáil, who got less than 5% of the vote, shows this is a government who, while they've only been in office a year, have been in office far too long. And I think even in a constituency as affluent as Dublin Bay South, the overwhelming majority of people want change.
And finally on that note, Owen, and thank you, I won't detain you too long more. In regards to that constituency, many commentators made the point that the challenge now for Sinn Féin is to basically expand from its perceived working class only support and to attract the kind of support of affluent constituencies, as you describe them, like Dublin Bay South, if you're ever really to stake that place as the main player on the Irish political landscape?
Well, two things. First of all, if you look at the breakdown of the votes from the tallies, and if you look at the areas where Sinn Féin came second after Ivana Bacsik, it was in precisely many of those more middle-class areas or areas with emerging professionals. If you take my constituency in Dublin Midwest, half middle-class, half working-class, we take 40% of the vote. We have two TDs. I think Sinn Féin is already at that stage. What we need to make sure is that the next general election, we stand a sufficient number of candidates to become the largest party in the state and then be in pole position to negotiate with other parties a government of change that delivers real change in housing and healthcare and childcare, as well as advancing a united Ireland. And I think if we do that, I think the future of the country will be much better than it's currently looking under Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar.
On that range of topics, but primarily the meeting of the Joint Committee on Housing yesterday, which calls for every death of a homeless person to have an adult safeguarding review, and also out calling for an increase in rent supports for homeless people outside of Dublin who are trying to rent a home. Just some of the 17 recommendations emerging from that committee based on their own report and the report by Dr. Austin O'Carroll. Certainly plenty of thought there for thinking, and on those other issues. Indeed, party spokesperson on housing, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Midwest, Owen O'Brien. Good talking to you again, Owen.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for your time this morning.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. Whitewatersc.ie.
Okay, what a lovely photograph Bill sent in of the Hill of Allen yesterday evening. Incredible colours, an orange sky against the beautiful greenery of the trees and hedges around the place as well. Lovely. We have a gorgeous country. Of that, there is no doubt whatsoever. And thanks. We've done the non-euro countries. Thanks indeed for everybody sending in those. Which country is allowed to use the euro as its own legal tender and mints its own euro coins, but it's not in the EU? Says Pat Caffrey in Selbridge. Answer in a minute or two. It's turning into a quiz then. Pat Caffrey, how are you, Pat? Which country is allowed to use the euro as its own legal tender and mints its own euro coins, but is not in the EU? All right, okay. Little hint. One of the smaller ones we mentioned earlier on, all right? Clem, you mentioned earlier the current busy fixtures schedule for GAA club players. All right, I'll tell you what, Frank Delaney has sent me in a message on that. Frank, I'll hold that until we hear from our listener later on regarding his dissatisfaction with the pressures he says are being put on players to fulfil too many club fixtures at the moment. Owen.
Well, Clem, a boil water notice remains in place for the Carlow North Regional, Rathvilly Supply and the Tullow Public Water Supply, which includes parts of Wicklow and indeed South Kildare as well. Experts from Irish Water and Carlow County Council are working to assess the situation and investigate and implement solutions to lift the notice as quickly as possible. And to bring us up to date on that, joining me on the line now is Jim Fitzgerald. He's Regional Operations Manager with Irish Water. Jim, good morning to you and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Owen. Thank you.
This was a boil water notice which was issued late last week. It's carried into this week as well. Just explain to us exactly what happened.
Yes, on Wednesday evening, about 10 p.m, two plants in Carlow, which would be Tullow and Rathvilly, both shut down because of there was an alarm set that automatically shuts the plant down because of the turbidity or the cloudiness of the water. Both of those plants take the water from the Slaney. So obviously something, some pollution incident passed through the Slaney and it shut down both plants. Following the shutdown, then we would have discussed with Carlow County Council and with the HSE on Thursday about the situation. And it looked then that it would take a while to sort out the problem until we probably identified what the problem was and how, you know, how we would move on. So the important thing was that people would have water for toilets and for washing hands, etc. So the decision I had following consultation with the HSE was to put on the boil water notice. When we ever put on the boil water notice, we always have to have a listing criteria. In other words, how do we remove the boil water notice? And to do that, we need some clear samples and we need the turbidity or the cloudiness of the water to return to normal. So since Thursday and Friday, when the boil water notice was put on, we've been going through those tests and monitoring the plant. You know, the plant would appear to be back working near as normal now, but we're just waiting on the final suite of tests. So we would hope to be talking with the HSE maybe later this evening with our list of tests, and if they are satisfactory, then following the advice from the HSE, we'll move to the next stage.
Well, the latest information that we got from Irish Water yesterday is that the population affected by the boil water notice is approximately just over 35,000. You can see a map of the areas affected on www.water.ie. But I just want to run down through the areas which are affected, and we'll start off with County Carlow, Carlow Town, Tinryland, Nerney, Kernanstown, Ballylou, Palatine, Killerig, Grange, Rathvilly, Tullow, Ardatton, Ballon, Rathoe, Benacerry and Tankardstown, County Wicklow, Liscommon and Ballyconnell, and then of course here in County Kildare, Castledermot and Grainy both need to boil their water. I believe there were other parts of Kildare, Jim, that were initially listed in that, the likes of Kilkee and Ballitore, but they've since been taken off it.
Yes, and the original notice we would have had the other areas that you mentioned there. So there would have been about a population of 4,000 in Kildare. Following review then with Kildare County Council and just looking at the supplies, we were able to reduce it to Castledermot and Grainy. So the total number would, in Kildare would be about 1,900, about 700 properties. And then in Wicklow, it's much smaller, it's about 150 properties. So at the moment, I think it's important people look at the map to know what part of Castledermot, because Castledermot is actually supplied by a number of schemes. It also, part of the town comes from Trolland, through the old Kilcullen Reservoir. So it's not all of the area. That's why the original area would have been larger.
Okay, and just finally then, Jim, to remind us in general what water must be boiled for. So it is essentially everything from brushing your teeth to drinking to preparing food, etc.
Yes, it is. There's a lot of details on our website, and I think we will send you through the details as well too. So, it would be for drinking, preparing water, preparing drinks, preparation of salads, brushing your teeth, and making of ice. So we would hope that, following the test back, that we'd be in touch with the HSE later today, and if not tomorrow, and then come back with some better news, because we'll obviously keep you informed at that stage.
Oh, and if I could come in here with Jim, it's Clem here, Jim. We're just getting queries, and maybe Owen might have the list, or if not, yourself, Jim. Mary says, I'm wondering, is Cookstown under the boil water notice, and also is Ballytor okay to use the water from the tap now, says Laura.
I think it's important probably to check on the map. I'm not sure exactly on Cookstown, but again, if somebody wants to check the map, or if they want to ring Irish Water, they'd be able to check it directly for them, which is a free phone number, 1800 278 278. Ballintore, as you mentioned, was originally on the list, but it's not on it now. But again, it's important for people just to check the map.
Irish 1800 278 278. If you're not sure about that, Ballytor is definitely clear, possibly Cookstown as well in relation to that. Thanks, Jim. That it on?
Yeah, that's everything. So those parts of Kildare, once again, that remains on the boil water notice as of yesterday morning. Parts of Castledermot and Grainy. There's also considerable parts of Carlow and also Liscommon and Ballyconnell in County Wicklow. But of course, we'll keep you up to date throughout the course of the day on our news bulletins here on KFM. But Jim Fitzgerald, Regional Operations Manager with Irish Water, thanks for joining us, Jim.
Thank you indeed, Jim. In regards to that, from the list of areas you said about Carlow there, Owen, it seems like nearly the whole of County Carlow is under that boil water notice, and those areas in Kildare less than we had initially thought anyway in regards to that. Now, some of your other messages coming in, Clem, I'll go back to the sports story in just a minute. Blessington Lakes last night trying to catch a trout for Clem's tea. No luck though. Who's out there catching trout for my tea? Owen Beattie. It wasn't you fishing in the Blessington Lakes last night, was it?
It wasn't me, no. I wonder, was it Mick and Salins? It could possibly be Mick.
All right. I want to see that trout parked out at reception this morning, all right? I'm sure you got a nice bag of them. What a lovely photograph, though, of the Blessington Lakes. And what a lovely pastime in these evenings to be out the piece of fishing and stuff like that. Clem, just wondering why the Ballyteague Bog Road wasn't done up. It's in a dreadful state. They only did down as far as Littletown Way. They resurfaced over the good road that was there and didn't do what really needs to be done in relation to that. Okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to take a quick break. Then we'll be back with more. A protest by the Kildare Growers today outside the Convention Centre in Dublin. And then that sporting issue being raised by a listener who says Kildare County Board is imposing too much pressure on club fixtures, on club players, regarding the number of fixtures they have to fulfil on a weekly basis.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay then, and before news of that court case I was talking about earlier regarding the Mother and Baby Homes Commission report, Patricia Ryan, I notice her parliamentary assistant is just emailing us a statement regarding the pairing arrangements. Not sure if they realise that we've had their party spokesperson on housing, Ona Brin, on, who explained the reasons behind the pairing arrangements that Sinn Féin refused to go along with in the Dáil the other evening. And it just, I'll give you the opening paragraph. It says, thank you for the interview yesterday. You stated Colla claimed that on October the 1st I had misrepresented my vote. As you can see from the article that I shared in that post, Colla supported the government. It is he who misrepresented his votes. He thinks by voting for government amendments, which totally change the purpose of a bill or a motion, that the people of South Kildare will think that he voted for a motion. Anyway, she goes on to say, Carl portrays himself as the voice of the Defence Forces, many of whom are on the breadline, but many enlisted members have told me that the measures he has supported are very much against the interests of ordinary enlisted men and women. Now, in fairness to Carl Berry, I think as a former Deputy Commander of the Irish Army Ranger Wing, I think it necessary to point out that it would be most unlikely that Cathal Berry is going to vote against any provision that might be detrimental to the terms and conditions of ordinary enlisted men and women in the Defence Forces. And Patricia goes on about other stuff. She says Cathal Berry voted against the ban on evictions, voted to support local property tax legislation, voted against the bill which allowed a tax break for vulture funds. Well, he explained what he voted for were the other good provisions in that, and she said he has refused to support a Sinn Féin motion to return the pension age to 65. That's statement just coming in from on behalf of Patricia Ryan from her parliamentary assistant. Now, actually, time is just getting away from me. I'll leave that court case for the moment and go to you, Owen, because you have news of a protest that's been carried out by a Kildare organisation in Dublin today.
Indeed, exasperated plant nursery owners are taking their frustrations on the ban on horticultural peat harvesting to the seat of the Irish government today, saying they're being ignored and let down by the government. Larry Doran, a spokesperson for Kildare Growers, is quoted as saying that he feels as though they're at the end of their tether since the ban on harvesting of peat on bogs of over 30 hectares. Well, indeed, another founder member of Kildare Growers, owner of Woodstock Trees and Shrubs in Carberry, Matt Lohan, joins us on the line now. Matt, good morning.
Good morning indeed. How are you?
Not too bad. Tell us what this is about, Matt, for people who are not aware. What is this protest in aid of?
Well, it's very simple, I suppose. Our raw material has been denied to us. Our industry is under serious threat because of peat harvesting for horticulture is being stopped. Now, both planning permission and a licence is now required for peat harvesting. No harvesting company has been successfully getting permission. Why? It's because of serial objectors. You know, a bit similar to the forestry objectors. They are non-government organisations which incur no liability for court costs if it goes on and on.
Yeah.
So, you know, if your raw material is denied, one we have in abundance in Ireland, but because of environmental issues, which we are very aware of and very sensitive to, is in the argument for everything at the minute. And people are talking green, which probably may not understand all the consequences of it.
So the protest is taking place this afternoon. How many people do you expect are going to go up to the convention centre today, Matt?
Well, yes, because of COVID and because of, you know, not wanting to cause too much traffic chaos, it's confined to 200 people. And we have some of our produce on display as well for to help the people understand what we produce. So it's quite a modest protest so far, and we hope we don't have to get any larger or, you know, get more recruits to win our case or to fight our case.
Yeah, and just finally then, Matt, and very briefly, obviously this affects nurseries right across the country, but it also affects people's livelihoods and jobs. And like I mentioned, you're an owner of a nursery in Carberry. So, you know, a lot depends on this.
Well, you know, in the past, SMEs, which we would be part of, and, you know, we got assistance from the government for being an SME. We sort of needed that, and we got strength from it. But it's insane to think that there's no one shouting for us now, or no government department taking responsibility for what's happening.
Okay.
We are suffering the consequences of the larger picture of peat being harvested for burning to produce electricity in a power station. You know, it was like a monster gobbling up the bogs of Ireland, whereas all we need is, I think it's 0.12% of the bogs in Ireland. Can you imagine how little that is?
Yeah. Well, like I said, the protest takes place this afternoon. We'll keep abreast of it, and indeed we might get you back on the programme in future as well, Matt, to see what comes out of this protest, sure, if anything. But he's a founder member of the Kildare Growers, owner of Woodstock, yeah, Trees and Shrubs in Carberry. Matt, yeah, Lohan, thanks for that, Matt.
Okay, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you, Owen. Now, just before we go to that sporting item, to tell you that case that's going on in the High Court today, where eight women, some of whom cannot be named, are taking legal challenges against the Irish state, according to the Journal. A number of women have claimed that their testimony was misrepresented in the Mother and Baby Homes Commission report and have taken issue with the fact that they were not given a right to reply before the report was published in January. Orla Ryan with this article in the Journal. The Commission of Investigation dissolved in February, so the women are taking cases against the Minister for Children, the Irish Government and the Attorney General. Amongst those taking the case are Philomena Lee, now 88 years of age, seeking to have certain findings of the Commission's final report, such as those related to forced adoption, quashed. She, of course, was sent to Shanross Abbey Mother and Baby Home in Tipperary in 1952. Her son was later adopted without her consent. She was pregnant when she was sent to the Mother and Baby Home. You'll recall, of course, her life story was made into a book, The Lost Child of Philomena Lee, and also a film as well. Another case is being taken by Mary Steed, who was born in the Bessborough Mother and Baby Home and is the US coordinator of the Adoption Rights Alliance. She's seeking to quash the Commission's findings that there was no evidence any child was harmed by vaccine trials carried out at the institutions. Another survivor, Mary Harney, also wants certain parts of the report quashed. She's now 72, born in the Bessborough Mother and Baby Home in Cork in 1949. She claims her statutory rights were breached by an alleged failure to be given an opportunity to make submissions to the Commission's report. A number of other women are also taking cases they cannot be named. That test case is before the High Court later today, and indeed we'll have Rita Ryan of the Two Mothers and Arbita Murphy of the Two Mother and Babies Alliance with us on the programme tomorrow morning to discuss an alternative report that they want the government to adopt rather than the Mother and Baby Homes Commission. And I'm sure she'll be reacting to today's judicial review test cases as well in the High Court. But first, Pat Deering, good morning to you.
Morning, Clem. How are you?
Now, Pat, what's your bone of contention with Kildare County Board Fixtures Committee?
Well, as I outlined to you yesterday, Clem, and thanks for affording me the opportunity. First of all, I just want to say that I'm not speaking on behalf of my own club or any club in the county. It's only a personal observation of what's going on at the moment. I want to...
Okay, that's clarified. So, what are the things that are annoying you?
Well...
Go ahead.
Sorry, Clem. Yes, well, I suppose you can break it down into two. I realise... Our lack of time.
No, we don't have to go. Just carry on.
The immediate one, there is, you can break it into two factors. One of them is player welfare currently, because of the congestion of fixtures. And the second issue is the problems that are afflicting a large number, particularly of rural clubs in County Kildare, in relation to the ability to field teams, get the numbers out playing, etc. Now, this issue has been highlighted by high-profile people like Pat Spillane and Joe Bolley and the national media in the past, and I see it coming home to roost.
All right, you're making the point that, for example, many clubs are being asked, and many teams in clubs in the county are being asked to play two games a week, and you mentioned in your letter to us that in your case, your club was asked to play three games in a week.
Three games we were asked to play on a Sunday in a championship relegation final. We were asked to play the following Wednesday night, and we were asked to play on the Saturday. That's three matches in 6 weeks.
For the same team or just the same club?
No, the same club, the same team, the intermediate team playing in Division 3 of the league, and they played the intermediate relegation final against Kilcullen on the Sunday. So there was three games in 6 days.
And you're now saying that many clubs in the county are being asked to implement two fixtures a week with the same team. But isn't all this, Pat, beyond the control of Kildare County Board, who are just trying to, you know, satisfy clubs who have qualified for 2020 competitions. And because of what happened with COVID, I mean, they're caught between a rock and a hard place. They're trying to do catch up with the 2020 competitions and also get the 2021 competitions underway.
Well, I'll respond to that. The 2020 competitions, right, as far as I'm aware, were concluded last Sunday with last year's junior final. There were some other ones which were concluded in the preceding 4 to 6 weeks. They are concluded. But for the last 2 weeks and for the next 2 weeks, to the best of my knowledge, certainly in Division 3 and 4, possibly Division 2, every Wednesday and every Saturday, that's 4 weeks, at minimum of 4 weeks, two matches per week. Now, Clem, it is fine and it's okay for some of the larger clubs, perhaps, and I'm not trying to personalise this, but to me it's very important. They might be operating out of a large panel. There are clubs in County Kildare which are operating out of a playing panel of anything from approximately 20 players. That is a fact, and I know that personally. Now, with the midweek fixture in particular, on a Wednesday and a Saturday, some guys are working away at whatever. The difficult people, other people have family issues. They have to come home. The match is at 8 o'clock. It creates hassle. But from an injury point of view and from a welfare point of view, there is no recovery period whatsoever. Now, it's fine for a team that might be drawn on a panel of 30 or 35. But if you're drawing on a panel of 20-odd,
and there's also a training twice a week, as most teams will be doing.
The reality, Clem, is, and I was speaking to a few people over the weekend who also had matches postponed, or not postponed, who weren't permitted a postponement, to have to concede a walkover. Now, that's fact. Walkovers from the club. And if you check, or if anybody wishes to check, they will see that I'm correct. I have to say, in our case, I remember our club sought a postponement. The team that we were scheduled to play.
Your club is what, Pat, again? Nurney, isn't it?
Yeah, they were willing to give the postponement, but the CCC said no. The fixtures are made and they have to be adhered.
And the CCC, Pat, just to play devil's advocate, would be of a view, listen, we're trying to catch up with last year's fixtures, we're delayed in getting this year's fixtures underway, and I mean, that's a huge thing again. There were no club matches allowed until recent times. So the county board has lost a substantial portion of 2021. And indeed, the National GA, we know what's happening as well. Everything is being compressed now, Pat, and it's just down to COVID.
Yeah,
and if things weren't being compressed, if things weren't compressed, you'd have clubs complaining, why are we not able to play?
Well, I come from the opposite, and it's just my own opinion about that. There are always circumstances over which we've no control. COVID was an example. There were no football club matches played for approximately 6 months, hence the reason we had to complete competitions this year. That's understandable. But in the reality of where we are now, the modus operandi, from what I can discern, is to get all the leagues completed prior to the commencement of the championships, which will take place, start roughly 3 weeks after the Kildare exit the championship, or hopefully you're successful winning All-Ireland, whatever. They want to complete the leagues. It's a lovely paper exercise to say, we'll get those leagues completed, then we'll give you a gap of 2 weeks or whatever.
All right, so what would you do, briefly, Pat?
What I would do is, I think, first of all, there's no training taking place by some clubs because of the fact that they have two fixtures. There is no recovery for players who have injuries. We have players going out to play who are unfit because of injury or carrying injuries.
You made that point, but what's your solution?
My solution is, we play one league from here on in. To make a decision is fine, but to admit that it's not working takes a bigger and a better man. I would say, one league match per week. There is no problem in concluding the league matches at the completion of the championship. If it runs into late October, early November, it's not a problem. The powers that be seem to want to conclude the leagues prior to the championship.
All right.
It's unfair to clubs. It's unfair to players. It is demoralising. But in conclusion, Clem, I think through your programme and whatever, I just want to make a point in the long term.
No, this has to be very brief, Pat.
It will be very brief. 8-9 years ago, there was a committee set up in which I was one asked to join to look at the problems in relation to small rural clubs. And there's a number of them, particularly in South Kildare, who have difficulties, to see what could be done. That committee met twice. That was the end of it. We didn't work. And I feel if we don't look at that big picture, the rural clubs, particularly a number of them in South Kildare, are going to run into enormous difficulties. And the GAA, which has been the heartbeat of communities for generations,
okay,
will be lost.
All right, I'm going to stop you there, Pat, because we asked Kildare GAA Board yesterday for a statement. We haven't heard back from them, but we are going to go back again today looking for their reaction. Obviously, they might have waited to hear what you had to say. We'll go back to Kildare County Board again. We'll ask them to your reaction to the criticism in the first place and your proposed solution in the second place. So, and we'll come back on that tomorrow morning. Meanwhile, Pat Deering of Nurney GAA Club, but not representing his club in this particular contribution, which he pointed out at the beginning, making a point that I think is of concern to many people, and we hope the Kildare County Board will respond. Thank you, Pat.